Hey, it's Craig Finn. You're listening to the Hood Rat Recap Podcast.
And now the Logan came to party. That's a party at the Dead End Alley. Yeah, he told him what to celebrate. And I met William Butler Yeats. Sunday night dance party, summer 1988. At first I thought it might be William Blake.
We got bored, so we started a podcast about the best bar band in the land, man. This is the Hood Rat Recap, and we are back. We are your steady stream of the unified scene, all the news and the reviews of the band that you love and we love. And today's a special episode. We're talking about me and Gasper went to the Windy City itself, the Chicago shows, and we rode in, doubled up on a moped, you know, Dumb and Dumber style. And we were kind of confused on the way in. We kept seeing all these road signs with cigarettes super glued to them. Well, I guess it wasn't all the road signs. It was only the ones that said, "Welcome to Chicago." And I guess they didn't really say Chicago because they all had cigarettes where there were supposed to be eyes.
Thank you, Sam Kinison.
I guess Sam Kinison was there too for some reason. But hello everybody. This is Stage Right Mike on the mic, and I can talk hold steady all night. And when I like to talk hold steady heavy, I like to throw up the rat signal, and the Hood Rat Pack has assembled. And first off, I see my little moped buddy there right there, Gasper. Gasper, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Mike. But you know what? I've been trying to get people to call me Steve McQueen.
Why is that, Gasper?
Well, because much like the famous bullet actor, I'm the king of cool.
How's that going for you?
Not so good. Not so good at all. People keep calling me Crash Bandicoot.
Because
I'm going to dedicate that joke to our buddy Andrew from Australia and all the people from NASCAR down in Chicago.
Oh, my God. You're about as good as the Sheryl Crow song, Steve McQueen. That's about as... I'm going to start calling you Sheryl Crow instead.
Oh boy.
Kevin!
And that's the sound of our... I'm sorry.
I'm so glad so the joke is cracking you up more than it's going to crack anybody else up listening. I'm apologizing for you, and you think this is the funniest shit going.
I really do. And that's the sound of our third mic and our producer, Kevin is whatever. Kevin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Better than any joke you've put out. Better than the fifth take of this podcast so far. But we're going to get it. We have a lot to talk about. I've avoided kind of talking to you guys for the last week because I wanted to be as invested as our listeners are going to be in the story of you two running through Chicago and the Hold Steady show at the Salt Shed with the Mountain Goats. And I can't wait. Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, in sweet St. Paul. Oh, that must be the hardest luck state of them all. Oh, we met him at some suburban St. Paul mall.
So for me, it was like the weekend before I actually got locked into the Taylor Swift concert for like, I was there for 34 hours. I worked two 17-hour shifts in a row, and I couldn't get out of the parking ramp the first night, so I only got like 2 hours of sleep. And so that was my weekend before, and then I was taking all weekend to catch up, and then I did the 7-mile drive or 6.5-hour drive from Twin Cities down to Chicago, and then Gasper, you flew in, right? You and Heather.
Yeah. Let me tell you, if for everyone in New York that complains about traffic, Chicago, man, you got Manhattan beat like I've never seen. Our flight was an hour and 55 minutes, and the ride from the airport to the hotel, which should have been 15 minutes away, was an hour and 9. It was insane how much traffic there is. I was talking to the cab driver, and he's like, "Yeah, this is kind of usual." I'm like, "Wow, man." There's actually signs on the side of the road when you're driving on the highway to the where the hotel area is that say should have took the train, and then the train's like running. I'm like, wow, man, they're like they're boastful.
I'm sure the fact that it was a holiday weekend and the fact that NASCAR was taking over the city streets probably didn't help matters either in trying to make your way around the city.
Yeah, like, so how crazy was that? Like, that's, I did not know about the NASCAR thing. Mike, did you know about NASCAR being there for that weekend?
No, I mean, I knew our buddy Andrew from Australia. That's what the reason he was coming, one of the big reasons he was coming, because he's a big Hold Steady and NASCAR fan. But that was all I had heard about. I didn't think about it after that until we got down there, and it was they were closing streets down, and
yeah. Just to clarify for the listeners, so like if you weren't there, when I heard NASCAR was going, and like I did know that Andrew was coming down for NASCAR, but I kind of pictured they were going to be at like a stadium somewhere. But they actually shut down like a lot of the major streets in Chicago, and they were going to race in the streets, which is nuts because it's like a city and like whatever. But there's actually a funny story with that. I don't know if you saw it in the news, but so the night before they were supposed to race, there was a bunch of guys that broke onto the track, like after they shut the streets down, and they brought their own cars and raced around the track. There was like 10 or 11 of them. And I think there was a couple that were stopped by the police, but we overheard some NASCAR people talking at one of when we were at a restaurant. They were saying, like, what are they really going to do to them? Because, like, it is a public street, and it's their cars. They didn't steal anything. It's, like, maybe trespassing or reckless driving. But, like, when you put it that way, I kind of feel like I might take that chance. I might be like, screw it. I'm going to ride the NASCAR track in Chicago.
I mean, that's one of those stories I guess you get to carry forever, like – hey, they closed down the city, and we put our cars on it, and I came in second.
So we went to go to the show at the Salt Shed, which that's a brand new venue there. I believe it opened up in February earlier this year. And, man, that was a cool venue.
Very cool. And you're right, brand new. They were still laying down some fresh cement outside in some areas. It's just how new it is.
Yeah.
And I guess the Empty Bottle is the owner of it or runs it, I believe.
So there's a promotion company called 16 Inches on Center, which is run by Bruce Finkelman and Craig Golden. And they are the team behind the Salt Shed, but also the Empty Bottle, Talia Hall, Evanston Space, Beauty Bar, and the Promontory. So they're pretty much holding all the keys in on the music scene in Chicago.
So just to be clear, this was Saturday night, the show, or Friday night?
It was Friday and Saturday. So June 30th, July 1st was the Salt Shed shows, and July 2nd was the Empty Bottle show.
Because I saw a photo that the Hold Steady posted on their Instagram, like the over-the-drum kit behind the back of the stage with the audience behind them shot, and it looked packed. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a pretty big room. I think it holds like 3,500 people, and it looked very, very crowded.
I think you've been at a bigger one, Gasper, but this is the biggest Hold Steady crowd I've ever been at because it went way. This was a big A-frame shed, you know, like it's called. It's called a shed, and it was just so cool. It was so modern looking, and it had the Morton Girl logo on the roof on the outside, and just really cool place. I was so impressed.
They actually took what it is it's the Morton Salt Building. Mm-hmm. From when they were making Morton Salt there, that they converted into this concert venue. And it is a 3,600 capacity. They also have an outdoor portion of the venue that they call the fairground, which is, that's a 5,000-person capacity. But with the weather we got in Chicago, I was kind of glad that it was inside. It worked out pretty good. Although I will say it was hot as hell. That was probably the hottest show I've been at ever.
Wow. And then how was the sound system? You know, new rooms, new sound, like...
I'd want to say something about that. I thought night one especially, because they had... Well, first they had to throw they made the Mountain Goats leave before they played this year. I think Mountain Goats had one song left, do you think, Gasper? Was that it?
Oh, yeah. So that was a crazy story. So the Mountain Goats very often will end with this year, and that's the song that Craig comes out and sings the last verse with him, and you know, the chorus is, I'm going to make it through this year if it kills me, and then he ends it, and it almost killed me, and it's kind of like a big crowd thing. And they did No Children, and then went to go into this year, and they were like, nope, you cut for time. We're like, wait, you're going to cut the Mountain Goats on like the biggest Mountain Goats song?
Yeah, that'd be like cutting the Hold Steady for when they're doing killer parties. That'd be like cutting that song off.
100%
So then the Hold Steady crew came out and they started setting up, and they seem like they're kind of flustered, like maybe they're flustered for time, or and then it started, and this is the one show where I've been at where I could hear, I was in the second row, so I was kind of like where I always am, and I could hear every note, and I could hear every one of Craig's lyrics like crystal clear. I was It was maybe the clearest show I've ever been to, where I could just hear everything crystal clear. I don't know if you agree, Gasper, but...
Yeah, the sound was great. It really was. And I'm not sure if, like, if they were working through some issues, because the first night I noticed, Dillinger 4 opened up the night, both nights. And when the first night when Dillinger 4 played, they sounded really rough. I mean, it could be that they haven't played a show in 18 months. That's part of it. They're not playing regularly. But... it was one of those things, like, Heather was with me, and she turned to me, and she's like, wow, they're pretty rough. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm just so happy to see them. But night two was, like, a completely different Dillinger 4 set, and they sounded on point. So I don't know if it was a monitor thing or what, but...
I mean, it could be if they were in an interest of time, maybe they didn't get a sound check Friday because of the way the show was pacing that, you know, the whole city takes their sound check, the Mountain Goats gets theirs, and then... If there's time before Doors, that third band will get a thing. Otherwise, they just get a line check to make sure their instruments work. And, you know, they try and dial it in live, which is, you know, hearing that the Mountain Goats lost a song, there was some kind of issue going on where they definitely probably were running against a curfew or running against something that maybe affected them getting a sound check.
Although they went pretty late, right? Didn't they go to about 12?
Yeah.
12:30 maybe?
Yeah, I think and then I thought somebody said there was no curfew. I think your assessment was, I heard you said it, Gasper, like you think since they're a new venue, maybe they just didn't know what they're dealing with. They're like, oh, we have time limits, and maybe they took time limits too serious that they set up and then overreacted.
They're working out the kinks. But overall, it was great, excellent.
Yeah, and the people there were great. All the workers were great. Just great people.
Yeah, and we saw so many people from the scene there. I mean, Dallas was there, Jason from Denver, Andrew from Australia, David, Buddy, and Mike, who was just on the show, and the whole crew, and then Ella, who from Ella and Kyle that we had on the show. Did you see that vest that she made, dude? Like, that was incredible.
Yeah, if you see the rock poster for this show with the rock jacket held together with rock star patches, she kind of did a simile of that, and really impressive. Yeah,
wow, that's very cool.
Like, all handmade. Like, she made her own patches and everything, and like, it was the Hold Steady, the Mountain Goats, the D4, and like all the references. It was so
she
cool.
Handed us some patches where there was like cigarettes in front of eyes. Yeah.
Rob from England was at that show.
Oh, wow.
Too. Well, he was there. He was there night two, but we ran into Rob from England, Andy, who we hung out with in the 7th Street Entry show, and then of course we met a lot of Do Friendly friends at the show. One of which was Trent from Indy, and he told us a great story about the time he took his wife for the first time to a Hold Steady show, and we'd like to feature that here on a new segment we're going to call First Night.
So I take my wife to this show. And he comes out on stage, and she's like, he looks like Charlie Brown, Craig Finn.
Wow.
This guy he's not a musician. He looks like Charlie Brown. And I'm like, just give it a chance, right? So about two or three songs in, she's into it. And we wind up starting a party where I had gone from originally being a little worried she wasn't having a good time to now she's the life of the party. So the night goes on. The show was great. The energy was great. The crowd, everything was awesome. And we wrap up and we leave, and I wake up in my hotel room the next day, and I say to my wife, I'm like, that was a good time, but I think I might have gotten a little drunk. And she goes, yeah, you got a little drunk at the show last night. And I said, well, the good thing about that, though, is that I didn't eat anything bad for me late. I just came home and went to bed. And she's like, no, they had a food truck out front. And you ordered a bunch of lobster rolls and ate them in the Uber and fucked up the guy's Uber. And then ate them in the elevator in the hotel and trashed the elevator. I'm like, oh, man. Well, it was a good show. She's like, it was a great show. And I'm like, at least I didn't spend any money. And she goes, oh, no, you bought merch for everybody.
That sounds like a Hold Steady song right there.
So I laid all our T-shirts out on the floor that we got to keep.
We bought one of everything. On that first night.
She's smiling.
getting into the Hold Steady set list that night, were there any sort of surprises, standouts, something that you kind of walked away from night one going, oh man, that was...
Before we get into songs, we should talk about that controversy with Mosh Pit Josh.
Ooh, Josh controversy? I mean, for a while, he was our highest rated episode, so I'm going to be on Josh's side.
The venue had a policy that it was a venue sell for merch. So Mosh Pit Josh did not sell the merch at the venue, which is weird because, like, he's the man. Like, you see him in every one of these shows. So we collectively decided on the social media, I think it came through Discord, but I saw it around a bit, that whatever, because, like, people initially were like, we're going to boycott the merch. And we're like, don't do that. Like, that's just hurting the band. Like, there's no reason to do that. It's the policy of the venue. And so what they came up with was, when you buy your stuff, everyone's got to say, like, hey, where's Mosh Pit Josh? And, like, I did it, and I felt kind of bad afterwards because you just saw the exhausted look on this dude's face where he's like, oh, I think he's doing a song tonight or something.
Wow.
Like, how many times am I going to get this question?
That's rough. You know, and it's not that poor merch guy's fault because the venue just hires him. And, you know, certain venues have certain rules for cash outs and stuff. And, you know, that's unfortunately, as bad as it seems to the attendee, the bands know that in advance. Like, going in, the merch splits and all that stuff is in the contract. So, like, right. While it sucks for you as the fan because you really want to see Josh, you know, everybody on the ground knew what was happening before they stepped foot, except you, the fan, who was like, where's Josh? And then this poor guy is getting beat up by the whole scene. Right.
Well, he was missed at the merch booth, and he should know that we all love him. So,
you know. But. Did he make an appearance, though? Did he actually get on stage? Was the merch guy telling the truth, or was he, like, just trying to blow you guys off?
Oh, no, yeah. He was there. He did a song one night, and you actually saw him bouncing all around.
Yeah, you actually
get
to see him more because, like, he's bouncing around in the...
He actually posted on his Instagram he's got the best seat in the house, and, like, he just took pictures of himself, like, sitting in different spots.
Well played, Josh. Well done, sir. All right, so just so I'm clear, because everybody knows my take, you guys are in the second row of 3,600 people. I want to make sure I have my spacing right, which means there was no space.
Well, what's funny is I think we started out next to each other, and then maybe we were 20 feet apart, and then I was standing next to Andrew from Australia, which was cool to be standing on the same side of the planet as him. I mean, he came from Australia. That can't be emphasized enough. I was standing next to him, and then I think by the end of night two, I was like 14 feet away from him. I don't know how that happened, but
wow.
So I was like in the second or third row,
center stage, front of Craig. Yeah. Basically, Heather and I wound up over on the France side of things, but that was more because we were just trying to keep Heather comfortable.
But to answer what surprised me about night one, I found it to be a very unique show for the set list, because I counted, and I could have counted wrong. But, you know, on this show, how we've been doing the last three albums, we've been doing the Diamonds in the Drain game, just doing the last three albums. Well, I just counted the set list, and I could be off by one, but it shocked me night one, because 12 out of the 21 songs were Thrashing Through the Passion or newer. So it was the last three albums were over 50% of the set.
So it's funny you say that. I have a breakdown. The way it breaks down is we got two from Almost Killed Me, four from Separation Sunday, four from Boys and Girls in America, four from Stay Positive, two from Heaven Is Whenever. Teeth Dreams got left out because no one loves Teeth Dreams but me. Thrashing to the Passion got four. Open to a Policy got two. Price of Progress got three. So the big winners of that set were Separation Sunday, Boys and Girls in America, Stay Positive, and Thrashing to the Passion, basically all at four.
Wow.
I mean, they played T-Shirt, Tux, Entitlement Crew, and Blackout Sam all in a row from Thrashing Through the Passion.
I was just about to say, like, you got hit with an onslaught. If you had those three songs and then Spices, and then, like, it wasn't until, like, song 17 you got back to, like, Stuck Between Stations, and then they come back with Denver Haircut. So, like, they did feature a lot of that newer stuff, like, all in a block.
Yeah, and they played Sideways Skull and Grad Junction in a row, so the Price of Progress got two in a row right there, so...
How good does Grand Junction sound in a large setting like that with all those people? Like, that was amazing.
Yeah.
We do what we do to survive.
I've only heard that song at like the record stores and like the smaller stuff. So like it was so good to hear it in that space.
I liked hearing the quiet pauses and understudies. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because that's kind of, you know, an understated song, and it was really interesting to hear in that large crowd like that. I thought it went over really well.
And then we got kind of a special thing out of your little hood rat friend this time around, because as most know, it was Steve and Tad's birthday on June 29th. So, like, during that breakdown part right before we all get ready to throw our confetti, we sang happy birthday to Steve and Tad, but to the meter and kind of the melody of your little hood rat friend.
Wow.
Yeah, they both turned 50. That's a big one.
That'll be a fun bit to listen to if they release that on Bandcamp. It'd be fun to hear the live happy birthday breakdown.
I hope they do, because they were really solid sets, and the sound sounded great to me. Yes. I'd love to hear how it sounds off the board for sure. And then we got a solid encore, Hornets. Josh came out for Stay Positive, which I feel like people like cheered even all the more, just because it was like our moment with Josh that he wasn't at the merch booth. And then Chicago seemed tired last night, which I was surprised that they played, because I was like, do you play that song in Chicago? You know?
And on night one, not to play it on night two, mm-hmm. like to kind of like almost throw it as a rib to the night before, because it's called Chicago Seemed Tired Last Night. You could have almost like gotten the night two crowd a little more hype, you know?
Well, he did have a gimmick for that, though. He did not deliver the line Chicago Seemed Tired Last Night. He changed it to Chicago Seemed Wired.
Oh, there you go. Did you guys take note or remember what was the walkout music?
Lido Shuffle.
Was it Lido?
Boss Gags, yep. They might get a cheap trick in there for Chicago or something. But.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I mean, it sounds like it was a hell of a show. And, you know, you got a great set list out of it. And it's nice to see really that later stuff that sometimes we forget about be featured. You know, the fact that Price of Progress got 3, Thrashing Through the Passions got 4. Open Door got 2 that night. So, like, you know, the later albums, you know, made up almost
And the Price of Progress had, like, 3 out of 4 songs at one part set. Yeah.
What happened after the show? Like, did you guys go out? Was there a bar? Was there a post, you know, scene gathering?
We are so lame because we were so exhausted. We did not go out after night one, but we did gather. We'll get to night two. We did go out for a small gathering. But I guess we should mention a bit about the Mountain Goat set. That was great. I mean, I've seen them before, but it was really fun to see them in this setting. It would have been nice to see them do this year, but we got some of my favorite songs. We got Younger, we got Dance Music, Hostages, which was very cool.
Great song.
And that No Children version that he did night one, I thought was pretty cool.
Yes.
It was like a jazzier version of it, basically. It was cool to hear it that way.
And the security guards up front had obviously were not Mountain Goat fans, because they were just laughing their heads off at No Children.
No Children.
It is kind of funny when you hear it for the first time if you haven't heard it before.
But then we went and we explored Chicago a little bit. I know what I did, but Mike, that's one thing we didn't talk about. Like, what did you do with your time in Chicago before night two?
Before night two, that's great. Well, let me talk about getting back to night one, what we did. You know, we said we went home and crashed, and it was pretty pretty uneventful. Well, I stayed in a hostel, and so I was getting back to about 2:30, so I was afraid of waking people up, you know, because I had roommates that I still hadn't seen yet. I was in a top bunk of a bunk bed. So I opened the door afraid, and all the lights are on. It's super bright in there, and all these gentlemen that are my roommates are sleeping on top of unmade beds with their blue jeans on, and it was humid. It was like 80 and humid. So I thought it was almost like walking into an overdose situation. But I like what Jason from Denver said. I agree with him. He said it was kind of like a cult. It seemed like a cult thing. So I was the last one to get into bed. I left the lights on for a while, but then I had to get up and go to the bathroom. So then I was the adult in the room, and I turned the lights off. And then in the morning, I was the first one to wake up, and they still hadn't changed positions. So I went to bed after them, woke up before them, and they hadn't changed positions yet. So that's my little It was called Wrigley Hostel, which, and I, like I said on my posting, it was aptly named because it was steps away from Wrigley Field, and the toilet paper was rather hostile. So so that's how I'm going to always remember that place, my little cult member roommates, but yeah.
I saw your post on that, and I love the policy that you guys came up with. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I tried small talk, and then it seemed like a new concept to them, like they hadn't encountered it in their lifetime before. So I just kind of gave up, and it seemed to go pretty good that way. Like the no small talk policy, just kind of move around in silence seemed to be working for us. So I found it kind of convenient after a while. Yeah,
that was hysterical. What did you do with your day two before the show in Chicago? Because we didn't really get to hang out like during the day because I was
I had a little bit of George Costanza where I had to move my car because there's all paint. Well, I was in the shadow of Wrigley Fields and there was games or every day I was there, which was not good planning on my part. And so I had to move my car. Like the first day I just paid for stadium parking and that was too expensive. So I got a free spot, but I had to drive around and find an empty spot. And so I had to move my car. So I just kind of hung around Wrigley. They have a bunch of, you know, it's the sweet part of the city. They got all the bars and restaurants down there. And one funny thing that happened, I went, you know, my girlfriend collects this stuff and she is from Illinois. So I went into, I go, I'm at the Wrigley store right now because they have the stores on the opposite side of the stadium. And so I was sending her a video. I go, she wanted a hoodie. So I was like, pick one out. And then she goes, I just saw you on the security camera. And she sends me a picture of me walking down the street 10 seconds before that. She just be, I don't know, they had a security camera on the website or whatever. And she saw me. It was like weird. It was weird.
That's cool. Okay.
So that was about it. I just kind of hung out at Wrigley, ate somewhere. I didn't eat somewhere Italian, but I ate somewhere Thai. It was really good. So, and then I got ready for night two. What did you do? I know you and Heather went out a little bit, Gasper.
Yeah, we were total tourists. We went and saw the Bean. And took a cruise on Lake Michigan. There was like an architectural cruise, which was kind of cool. Hung out in the boat and drank bourbon teas and looked at buildings and all that stuff. That was actually really nice. And just walked around Chicago a little bit. Total tourist. Definitely total tourist. But then we all met up. So we met up for dinner at Daddy Smoke, which was – I loved the food there. I thought they were great. It was like this cool barbecue place. Shout out to them. And we made our way to night two at the Salt Shed.
What time did you guys get to the venue? Like, because, you know, when we went to Boston, we were drinking and kind of walked in, like, right before the show. Did you get there early, knowing it was going to be a mob scene, knowing what you were in for, getting in and out?
So that's actually one of the really cool things that I like about this venue. So, like, if to understand the layout, to get to the indoor venue, you have to walk through that courtyard, what they call the fairground. And basically what the fairground is the area before where the live stage would be for the outside area. There's like this huge courtyard with like all these food trucks and like these little shops that sell shirts. And there was like a guitar store there. And like, it was kind of weird, like the different stores they had, but like you can buy beers and stuff. And so if you got there, the doors were at what, 7, I think?
Yeah, you could get into the food truck area at 6 and the doors were at 7 and show at 8.
Right. And actually, the second night, I think we got in even earlier because it was raining, so they were letting people like take shelter there. So like 5:30, which was awesome because the line starts to form in that courtyard. So basically, you can go in, grab a bite to eat, and then like when you see people starting to line up, now you jump online and you're right up front. Which I had a couple of people ask me, like, "How'd you get so close to the front?" It's like we went there and hung out in this courtyard. It was the secret there. But that was pretty cool.
That's not my secret how I get to the front. I get up there and I sniff out the Mountain Goat fans. I get right behind them as close as I can. And then as soon as they're done, they leave. I just take their spot.
Was there a bit of that? Did you notice that? Like Mountain Goat fans that were just there for the Mountain Goats?
Night one, a lot left, right?
Yeah. I mean, like to an extent, basically, there's a lot of crossover between Mountain Goat and Hold Steady fans. And I think the majority of people there were for all three bands. But it did seem like about midway through Hold Steady set, there was a little more breathing room, which was kind of welcome at that point because, like I said, it was extremely hot. But still quite a lot of people. I mean, you saw the pictures. It was a ton of people for a Hold Steady show, and it was very cool to see that. So then, like I said, we got second set from Dillinger Four, which I thought was really tight. I thought they were great. And Mountain Goats, I think the second set was even better than the first.
Yeah.
I know Mike got a... got a really good view of John from the mountain.
Yeah, he put his face in my face and sang a lyric. He did it to like four or five of us, but he did one line to me from Spent Gladiator Part 2, I think the song was. It was like the last song.
Right.
And it was an amazing show. Now it was kind of funny because they opened up with this year because they got cut off the night before. So that would be kind of like the Hold Steady opening up with Killer Parties almost. But
right. But it was like kind of apropos, like if you were at the show the night before, it's like, here's the song we owe you,
right,
basically. Although Craig did not come out for that. Craig came out for a completely different song, which was kind of cool because we got like almost like a new tradition, I guess. Craig came out for Palm Quarterana, and did the whole song with him, which was pretty cool.
Hmm.
And my favorite part of the Mountain Goat set was we got Up the Wolves, which is, I think, hands down my favorite Mountain Goat song.
And we got Hostages both nights, which I think that's a really good song off his new album. And I think the new album is much like the Hold Steady, where their new album is just as strong as anything they've ever done, I think.
He's an amazing music machine, man. That guy just churns out music like we were saying, like once every 2 to 3 months, there's something coming out off of Bandcamp or he's putting out another record. And like, there is just so much Mountain Goats music that there's songs that I'll hear for the first time throwing them on Spotify because I don't listen to them as avidly as I do the Hold Steady. So, like, it's just a vast library. It was very cool.
I mean, it looked like a very cool set list. Looks like they did a couple of songs, but like Cadaver Sniffing Dogs both nights and a couple of those tunes that stand out from the Mountain Goats catalog. But it is fun that they open with this year instead of closing with it.
Yeah.
That was pretty crazy.
And so then we got the walkout song for the Hold Steady, which is what was the walkout song for the Hold Steady, Mike?
Because I thought it was going to be Cheap Trick, and it wasn't. It was
right. No, we got Saturday Night by the Bay City
Saturday
Rollers,
Night,
which was just as fun.
Yeah.
Now, do the Hold Steady fans know it enough to sing along? Like, because that's a very sort of audience participation.
Oh, absolutely.
Song.
Right. Yeah.
We got the whole chant, okay. the whole spelling out of
that's
Saturday
good. I just
night.
Wanted. I would I be a little it. Disappointed if the scene didn't know it and kind of just let it flop.
And this was the set that, like, I kind of thought in my head, like, this would have been your set, Kevin. This is the set that you would have wanted to see because it had a lot of the stuff that you look for in the sets. Like, they started with Stuck Between Stations. We got Slapped Actresses. We got Southtown Girls. Like, it was definitely a Kevin-centric
set. I'm looking at it as we're talking, and, like, You Can Make Him Like You is a song I love to hear, and Banging Camp and Constructive Summer into Hot Soft Light always plays well. So, like, those type of things that they do always makes it fun. And so, yes, I probably would have been very excited for this. And then they had people come out during the encore, right? The encore sort of became a free-for-all?
There's 2 points where people come out. We got, because there wasn't a Horn Steady, they did Banging Camp, and Matt Douglas from the Mountain Goats came out and played sax on that song, and then did so again during the encore for Hustle, Massachusetts, which was cool. But probably a feature of the whole night is the Girls Like Status.
Tell us song number 3 on John's last CD. Gonna make it through this year if it kills me. And it almost killed me. Song number 4 on that first E4. You want the scars, but you don't want the war. That's just hardcore. These kids are clever to the core.
John from the Mountain Goats and Patty from Dillinger 4 out because, you know, that's where Craig said he wrote everything he could into the song Girls Like Status. And he said, so when it came to the bridge, he had nothing else to say. So he just kind of changed the subject matter. And he put that line we all know, you know, from song number 3 of, he says John CD on the recording, but now he's changed it to Sunset Tree because they both rhyme. Or no, he said his last CD on the recording, but that's a real old CD now. So now he just says, or Sunset Tree. So he had John sing that part. And then when he goes to the part where he goes and song number 4 on that first D4, you know, and he's doing Dillinger 4, he had Patty sing that. Cause it's weird that he had Mountain Goats and Dillinger 4 What did he say? He wrote that song way back in 2003, 2002.
Yeah, he said it was something like that. And like it's like it was fortuitous that like here they are today.
Yeah, two bands that have never been together before, and they were both here on this night to sing their two lines that are right next to each other in the song. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a cool moment for sure. And before we get off the main set, like we've been talking to a lot of people about Carlos's.
I was just going to ask that because I saw that it was in the list. I was curious how it went over.
Because here, like, it was very different than the last time we talked about this, where it was coming off of, I think, Lord, I'm Discouraged. Where here, it's between Multitude of Casualties and Sequestered in Memphis, which is a completely different, like, way to go with its positioning. Like, Mike, what did you think about hearing Carlos's Cry now? Probably for the first time for you, I would imagine, right?
I heard it a couple times in Brooklyn before it was released officially, you know, on track.
Right, that's true. I forgot about that.
Yeah. I thought it kind of fit right into the set list. I thought it was, it feels like it's always been there for some, you know, already.
Right. I thought it was great. And you could see at least the hardcores, which that's the whole front area of the stage. Like, they're waiting for their moment to do the I Love You, I Feel You part of the song. And they do. And they yell.
And you're right. I think cool you said that's going to be a big sing-along part. I think it really is already the I Love You, I Feel You part.
Yeah. I definitely think by the time we get to Brooklyn Bowl, like, it's just going to be its own beast, for sure.
Awesome. I mean, it looks like a hell of a night, and the set list is really, you know, it looks like a great one. I personally, cheating, looked ahead at the next show.
Well, before we get into that, let me just, being that I did the breakdown of the first show, let me give you the breakdown of this show. So, night two, you get three from Almost Killed Me, four from Separation Sunday. Boys and Girls in America winds up being the big winner on this one, where it's six songs from Boys and Girls in America. Stay Positive with four, Heaven Is Whenever with one, again, Teeth Dreams Gets No Love, Thrashing Through the Passion completely cut out of this set, and Open Door gets three, and Price of Progress gets three. So, and then just to go a little bit further, between the two nights, if you look at the Salt Shed as one entity and not count the Empty Bottle, because it is kind of like a whole other thing, there are four unique songs off of Almost Killed Me played between the two nights. You get one on the first night, three on the second night. Boys and Girls in America, it's nine original songs played, like none repeated. Three off of Heaven Is Whatever, four off of Thrashing, six off of Price of Progress, three off of Separation Sunday, two from Stay Positive, Poor Teeth Dreams still at zero, and Open Door Policy gets five.
What does Heaven Is Whenever get off the two? Did they play anything extra from that, considering they had just released it on the Bandcamp?
I think they just got Hurricane J and Weekenders, right?
Yeah, the first night was Hurricane J and Weekenders. Second night, so they play Sweet Part of the City, which that's one of my favorite songs off of that record, so that was a welcome addition. But, I mean, that's a lot of unique songs for a 50-song set, basically, over the course of two nights.
Yeah, it seems like a great thing. And then when you look at what Sunday gave you at the Empty Bottle Show, which, Gasper, you didn't make that, right? You had to come back. But, Mike, did you get to that one?
No, I also skipped the Empty Bottle Show. Like, I've been there before, and it was just a Sunday. They usually don't play Sunday nights, so it was a little hard for me to make that one. Well, I did want to say night number two to wrap that up. The crowds were really well behaved both nights, but I don't know if you saw this guy, Gasper, because you're behind me, but I got that Charles Manson, Iggy Pop, Love Child kind of rushing towards the stage trying to get through us. And
yeah, there was like a couple of weird characters towards the end of the night.
Yeah, too, to sure. Paraphrase Craig, he had a haircut like Jesus Christ, but he had enlightened eyes. His eyes were lit up like pinballs. He just...
And we should mention, by the way, we did get together after night two. What was the name of the bar that Dallas steered us towards?
It was, I got it on my Instagram. It's like the Archie's Iowa? Archie's?
Yes, Archie's was the name of the place. That place was pretty cool. Like just a very normal, like stripped down locals place, like pool table in the middle of the room. Like they didn't serve a lot of different beers. We were drinking Hams, I think it was, with the local beers. And like one of the coolest parts about that was like, so I go to buy a round and the lady's like, it's $11. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And she's like, oh, is something wrong? I'm like, no, I just, you just gave me two beers and like a vodka soda for $11 in New York. That would have been like a $30 tab.
Don't look cheap drinks in the mouth.
That was pretty cool. But thank you to Dallas for steering us there. It was a pretty cool bar. He said that's his favorite place to go when he's in Chicago.
Yeah. It's a really old-fashioned looking place. Pretty cool.
It sounds like you guys had a great weekend. And since neither of you made the Sunday show, maybe we'll have to find somebody who was there. Because just looking at the set list, I'd be curious to hear how, you know, Flyover Halftime and Perdido, which is favorites of mine from the new album, yeah, went over.
I would love to hear those.
You know,
talk about a missed opportunity, because Mike walked around all weekend with this like yellow referee flag waiting for Flyover Halftime.
Yep, and I missed that.
I know. I don't want to give too much away, but even T-Streams got a little love on the Sunday show looking at it. So, you know, maybe somebody out there who listens one of our faithful followers could come on and give us a recap, because I'd just be curious to hear how that show played, since I know you had travel booked before it was announced, Gasper, so you couldn't stay. And Mike being exhausted from three nights of Taylor Swift and two nights of the Hold Steady made going home a smarter decision.
And I gotta say, looking at this set, I'm kind of jealous that I didn't get there. It was a really good set, very heavy on a lot of the old stuff, which I always like. And if you caught any of the videos from the Empty Bottle, like, the Empty Bottle seems like it's a way smaller venue. I've never been inside. But they were on point for their confetti game, man. The confetti explosion in that video was sick. I mean, so was the Salt Shed. There was quite a bit of confetti at the Salt Shed, like so much so that people handed me like these bricks of like the cut up, like, and I'm like, I got to break this up or I'm going to hurt somebody.
It's actually become a very popular thing at shows right now, where people are throwing cell phones and objects and even their mother's ashes at artists on stage. So I don't know. We're going to have to one day dive into that. But it's at least confetti doesn't hurt nobody.
Being on the topic of confetti, did you see Taylor Swift confetti was going for like $20 a single piece of confetti? Like, that is crazy.
At least there'd be no way to replicate that or counterfeit it at all.
Yeah, so. I mean, the Hold Steady versus Taylor Swift thing is a whole other thing, but that machine is something not to be believed. So it doesn't surprise me that confetti from her show goes for $20, and some fan in the world will pay it.
Getting a bunch of, at the Taylor Swift, they kept giving me these little bracelets that said Sexy Baby and stuff, and so I brought them... I brought them home to my daughter, but the cat loved them and just threw them everywhere. So.
Yeah, that's a big thing when you go to the Taylor Swift shows, is the Swifties make bracelets and trade them. And so you being the security guy, they finally thought you were nice and helpful, and they gave you some too. That's a very big movement at the show for Taylor.
That set off when it's supposed to be
on. All right, guys. So I just wanted, everybody at the show was coming up to us and telling us how much they love the Diamonds in the Drain game. I heard that numerous times. And I just wanted to explain, I think it's been over a year why we explained why it's called Diamonds in the Drain. It's, well, we're talking about Girls Like Status. Craig says it in that, and then he says it in Arms and Heart, the next song right after it. He says it totally different way, but mostly it's because we use D&D dice and they look like little diamonds, and of course we all know D&D stands for Diamonds in the Drain, so hence Diamonds in the Drain is why it's called that.
Above that fruited plain, there were diamonds in the drain.
So we're probably going to get a couple re-rolls, guys, because we've already done four songs and there's only 10, so it's a 40% chance we're going to have a repeat here, then we have to re-roll.
Gonna roll a dice and we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll get lucky. 7.
We have not done track 7 yet.
Wow, we haven't had any re-rolls yet. Wow. Okay, let's go in chronological order. I got Thrashing Through the Passion. Song number 7 is T-Shirt Tux, the very popular song.
for open door policy, we get the prior procedure.
There were some dudes on the roof, Jack, that were sitting with a sweet view of the sunset. They said you gotta meet the guy that gets the tab for this. Anything you want, he can cover it.
Which is technically the title track.
Yeah.
That's where he says open door policy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and for Price of Progress, City at 11.
He hung everything he had up on the rainbows. It was the only game left that's on that lane. And the kid that does collections will cut you into ribbons.
Well, this is pretty easy for me. Prior procedure is just, for all the love, we're throwing so much love at open door policy in this game. I think the one thing with open door policy is it has two or three songs that I don't really get into, and prior procedure, it might be my 10th favorite song on that album. You know, there's seven or eight songs I just absolutely love on that album, but that one's a little off for me. So that's my bronze medal. And then T-Shirt Talks is just a super cool, super fun song. We get the piano keyboards when we hear it live, the ties, and Bobby wears the T-Shirt, Tuck's T-Shirt and stuff. Just love that song. It's like, it's kind of like Thrashing Through the Passion, has kind of a cool vibe to it, and that's one of the songs that has a really cool vibe to it. I'm going to go, because I'll probably be the only one that gives it a gold, so I'm going to give a gold to City at 11. I just like the quirky lyrics to that. You have to kind of know who the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors are, which 80% of even football fans don't know who they are, because they play at such a, they play at a beautiful stadium, but they play at a weird time because they win all their home games because the visiting teams are jet-lagged, and then they lose all their road games because they're jet-lagged. But yeah, they play right across from Pearl Harbor. So like when we were there, we asked our hotel if they gave us a ride to the stadium because we're going to the Pro Bowl there, and they said no, but we have a ride to the Pearl Harbor thing every day, and that's right, and they're, you can walk right across the street from it. So I don't know if most people know that, but I think it's just kind of a quirky little song. I love it. So that's what I'm doing. I'm going City 11 gold, and T-Shirt Tux silver, and prior procedure bronze.
Okay,
nice. So I'm with you. The prior procedure is, I know it's the song where the name of the album comes from, but it's probably my least memorable song on Open Door Policy. It's not one I even can say I ever remember hearing even live. And, you know, a lot of the ones that always stand out for me kind of take on a new life live. And the prior procedure, just, I'm kind of with you on 10 out of 10. It's probably my 10th if I don't skip it to get right to, you know, the next one. For me, I'm going to go, I like City at 11, but not as much as I like T-Shirt Tux to me. City at 11 is a great song, and we've talked at length about the meaning, and you just talked about it too, but to put that song next to T-Shirt Tux and from Thrashing Through the Passions, I mean, that's a song that even when they play live is just always fun. And you guys just got to see it this weekend, and it's easily the out of these three, that's my gold pick. So for me, it's gold, T-Shirt Tux, silver, City at 11, and bronze, the prior procedure.
All right. I think this might be the first time Kevin and I are simpatico.
Wow.
I see things the same way. It's the prior procedure is, I mean, it's a good song, and it's an interesting story in the song. It's definitely not one of my favorites. It might even be one I skip, if I'm being honest, when I'm listening through that record. City at 11, also not one of my favorite songs off that record. I do like it. It's on this record that you hear him make the sports references, and this is one of those like where you kind of have to dive a little deeper to understand what he's talking about, and I did have fun with that, so I would give that the silver. And T-Shirt Tux is just a jam, man. That's one of the best songs off of Thrashing Through the Passion. It has that Craig Finn like snarkiness, that I love that line, me and the guy with the piano key tie are probably gonna play right through this, like, it's, that gets me every time. So yeah, so I'm gonna go the same as Kevin, gold for T-Shirt Tux, silver for City at 11, and bronze for the prior procedure. So where does that leave us score-wise?
Well, it's actually closer than you think between Thrashing Through the Passions and The Price of Progress. But because you and I gave it gold, and that's why when there's a three of us, we can't have a tie, T-Shirt Tux is the winner with 8 points. City of 11 comes in second with 7 points, and the prior procedure from Open Door Policy, being all of our bronze, only gets 3 points for this particular.
So Open Door Policy kind of coming back to the pack a little bit. They start out hot, now they get three bronzes here.
Yeah, they took a hit there. Yeah. All right, well, let's get into our next track.
All right.
Nine.
Jeez, we haven't had any repeats.
Wow, that's
yet.
Not even a repeat either. That's amazing.
Lucky dice.
We're 60% of the way into this. Okay.
That's because I'm using the good metal D&D dice.
So, for Thrashing Through the Passion, song number 9, The Stove and the Toaster.
Let's just say they owe me a favor. I did something for them. What it is doesn't matter. Here's what's important. It's gonna be easy.
Track 9 on Open Door Policy is Me and Magdalena.
Me and Magdalena used to go out every night. They thought she was the pretty one. They thought that I was nice.
Okay, and track 9 for Price of Progress is, of course, Distortions of Fate.
She slept really late and she dreamt in distortions of fate.
This one's going to be a tough category, dude.
Oh.
This might make me and Heather fight.
Yeah, I'm fighting with myself right now, Gasper.
Okay, keep the order. You go first.
Me go first? Got it. I think it's a surprisingly strong song on Open Door Policy, but Me and Magdalena, I'm going to give that the bronze. Just, these songs are good. These are three great songs. Nobody deserves a bronze out of that, but I'm going to give it to that. And I hate to do it, but I'm going to have to give the silver to Distortions of Faith, which I think is just an incredible song. I love the line where he says that the pilots did prayers right in front of the instruments and they said, this isn't what it looks like or whatever. I love it. It just puts me right there in the moment. I just love that song. I love the long outro. I love kind of the mystery of the story a little bit, even though we kind of mostly know what happens, but there's a little bit of mystery to it. But I haven't given a gold to Thrashing Through the Passion yet. And this is my favorite song off Thrashing Through the Passion is The Stove and the Toaster. It's just a strong storyline. It was one of the first songs where Craig's kind of doing these, where he kind of has two funny names, and he has The Stove and the Toaster and the baker and the chauffeur, you know, we're kind of seeing these weird matchups he has all the time now. This is kind of where he starts it off. So, yeah, I'm finally giving Thrashing Through the Passion a gold medal, and I'm happy to do it on this song.
Wow.
All right.
This is tough for me as well. But for me, I am going to go The Stove and the Toaster for the bronze. And it's only because of what it's up against. And I'm probably going to be in no man's land on my own. But my gold is Me and Magdalena. That story about him and Magdalena going out and being into Kiss and, you know, that whole story of going through the holidays and, you know, the Christmas part of it. To me, that story is probably one of my favorites on Open Door Policy. And that one stood out right away. And as much as I love Distortions of Faith, and it's a great song, that's why I'm giving it to Silver. For me personally, Me and Magdalena is definitely the standout, just because that story is so great.
All right. Yeah, man, this was definitely the hardest I think we've done so far. These are all gold star songs for me. But you got to make a choice. That's the whole point of this. And so, like I said, Heather's going to hate me. But Distortions of Faith, as beautiful as a song as that is, and I do really love it. I love the storyline that Craig's laid out. He's told it to us so many times, and I think it's interesting. That's going to be my bronze. And Me and Magdalena, I really do love that song. That's a song that's particularly a favorite of Heather and I, and this is where I'm going to get thrown out of the house. But I give that one the silver because it's up against Stove in the Toaster, which I agree with you, Mike. It's one of, like, top three on that record for me. And I was actually thinking about how, like, the one thing I would have liked to heard this weekend, and we didn't get it, and they didn't get it even at the Empty Bottle, with Stove in the Toaster. No. They haven't been playing that song a bunch. That's one of those songs that, like, when you think about songs you want to hear come back into the set, that's one of them. And I hope, you know, somebody hears this that convinces him to play it some more. But that's going to be my picks. It's Gold for Stove in the Toaster, Silver for Mia Magdalena, sorry, Heather, and Bronze for Distortions of Fate.
Well, we're all over the place, and I mean, there's no wrong answer. They're all three great songs, so you can't really get, I mean, they're all, these are gold somewhere in there, so, I mean, you can't really wrong answer.
I mean, I can tell you this is probably the closest we've had as a vote, as a group, since when we had track two, which was Epaulette, Sideways Skull, and Spices, and the breakdown for points is actually the same, but Stove in the Toaster is the gold winner because you both put it first, so that has 7 points. Me and Magdalena came in with the silver at 6 points, and as much as we all love Distortions of Faith, there can be only one bronze, and that wins done. With the five song. Yeah. Doing the album totals based on these three tracks, our gold album right now is Open Door Policy with 39 total points. The Price of Progress is silver with 38 points. So it's only 1 point behind. And Thrashing Through the Passions is at 31 points total right now.
Yeah, and I do think of those two albums equally, so it doesn't really shock me at all that they're right there. Yeah.
No, I don't either, and it's very funny because we've talked about my impression of Thrashing, and I know it's a big fan favorite, but it's probably out of the three my least favorite. It's very interesting that our totals right now, it's literally a point difference, and there's four songs yet to go to still bring it closer, but that's where we're at.
We'll see where this goes on the next time we do Diamonds in the Drain.
Yeah, but make sure you let us know, those of you listening at home, what your picks are. Maybe we're wrong, maybe we're right. Love to hear your thoughts too. People have been commenting on our pages, which has been exciting. So let us know when you can.
This segment is brought to you by us, the Hood Rat Recap playlist on both Spotify and Apple Music. And what we have is we have these 30 songs that we've been covering, and you hit the shuffle button and you get some, let us know, are you hearing any weird songs matching up against other weird songs in the shuffle mode? Just check out the Hood Rat Recap Franz 2.0 playlist on both Spotify and Apple Music.
He's bleaching out the blood stains. He's got diamonds in the drain. She said that she was coming, but she mostly just made hard.
And before we get out of here, I got a quick version of Who the Hell is Craig Singing About? So are you guys ready for this?
Yeah, let's do
it. I'm ready.
All right, so I kind of went with a Chicago theme. It's a Chicago show today. So did you guys know the song Chicago Seemed Tired Last Night? The very first lyric in the song is a name. Did you guys know that?
Did not off the top of my head.
So he says St. Alban went to Patty, I believe, right?
Wow, Gasper, I'm impressed because I knew what he said. And, well, here's what it sounds like because I'm going to play it and I still can't hear it even though I know that's what he says. Here we go.
Announced that Logan came to Patty. That's a party at the Dead End Alley. Yeah, he told him what to celebrate.
So, yeah, I guess he said Nelson Algren came to Patty at some party at the Dead End Alley.
I've been singing it wrong for years.
Funny enough, I do know who Nelson Algren is because he wrote The Man with the Golden Arm.
Yeah.
Which was a book I had to read in school.
That's very good, Kevin. School did you good.
They did.
So, Kevin, you're a big baseball guy. Whenever I saw that title, The Man with the Golden Arm, I always thought it was, I'm like, oh, is this a baseball movie? Is this a baseball book? And I was like, oh, what is this?
Yes. it's basically about a drummer who deals card games and in Chicago, no less. Like, that's all I could remember.
I thought it was the golden arm because I thought wasn't he shooting morphine into his arm?
I think he gets a morphine habit when he's in World War II. If it's been so long, my teachers be so pissed at me right now. Yeah, I know it's based on
World War II.
Yeah.
Nelson Algren, he's an American writer. Like we said, he's known for the author of The Man of the Golden Arm. He was considered a bard of the down and outer. So that's kind of, I think, why Craig's singing about him. He's singing about down and out people, and usually in Chicago. He liked writing a lot about Division Street in Milwaukee, which is funny because that's right down there by the Salt Shed where the shows took place this weekend.
I mean, what I'm seeing here online, it says, Algren articulated the world of drunks, pimps, prostitutes, freaks, drug addicts, prize fighters, corrupt politicians, and hoodlums, which basically is everything Craig Finn sings about.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
And, he's just the Chicago version of Craig Finn, yeah.
Yeah, and then it says, the protagonist of the book, The Man with the Golden Arm, Frankie Machine, is a drummer who's a dealer in an illicit card game. He's trapped in Chicago and picks up a morphine habit during his service in World War II. And he's married to a woman who he mistakenly believes became crippled in a car accident. And then it became a 1955 movie starring Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra.
That was a good one.
Because I didn't know the lyric, because it's very muddled in the playback, even when you hear it. And if Gasper's been saying it wrong, then I feel vindicated. I at least knew Nelson Algren.
Yeah, that was pretty good. You impressed me there. So then I have just a quick, you know, I haven't done a... From a Meatloaf to the Billy Joel, we've had our guests pick them, and I haven't done one since episode one, and I did kind of a goofy one way, but so it's been literally 30 episodes since I've done this. So I have one.
And the Meatloaf to the Billy Joel. Certain songs, they get so scratched into our souls.
So, and it kind of tails off that. You were saying The Man with the Golden Arm, and I was thinking, wait, somebody puts morphine into their arm? And this writer's from Chicago, that got me started thinking, I'm like, where else have I heard that? And I think of, do you guys know who John Prine is, the singer?
Sure.
Okay.
I don't, actually.
You don't know?
You're in for a treat, Gasper. He's from Chicago. He wrote his first album. He was a mail carrier, a postal worker in Chicago, and he was so bored, he wrote his first album as he was working. And so he has a song called Sam Stone. It's about before we had a guy coming addicted from morphine off World War II. This is Sam Stone comes home from Vietnam, and I'll play a little clip here.
But the morphine eased the pain, and the grass grew around his brain, and gave him all the confidence he'd lacked. With a purple heart and a monkey on his back, there's a hole in daddy's arm where all the money goes. Jesus Christ died for nothing, I suppose. Little pictures.
So there we go again with the morphine going into the arm, and he's from Chicago also. And I know when we do these from Meatloaf to Billy Joel's, we typically, you know, we're picking the same genre. I thought it'd be kind of fun to pick a different genre. Obviously, he's a folk singer. He's almost got a country feel to him. You know, but he's from Chicago. What's funny is he's always singing about Midwest locations. Does that sound like anybody we know? And and I just want to play one more clip before we get out of this. He has a song called Lake Marie. It's my favorite. Bob Dylan says it's the perfect song. He said he wished he would have wrote it, Bob Dylan. And this song starts out on the Illinois-Wisconsin border. It's really funny what he has to say there. But when he sings this section of the song, he gets very animated, like Craig almost. So this is a part of the song where they find two bodies in the parking lot, and I'll just play this for you here.
The dogs were barking as the cars were parking. The loan sharks were sharking. The necks were narking. Practically everyone was there. In the parking lot by the forest preserve, the police had found two bodies. Nay, naked bodies. Their faces had been horribly disfigured by some sharp object. Saw it on the news, the TV news, in a black and white video. You know what blood looks like in a black and white video? Shadows. Shadows! That's what it looks like. Oh, the love we share.
So he gets very animated in that part, kind of like Craig Finn. And I don't know, I think I'll put a link to that in the show notes, but I think everybody should listen to Lake Marie. And the other song was called Sam Stone. His most famous commercial song, I think, was Angela Montgomery, because one of the country female, maybe Reva, one of the big country female singers, took that to number one, I think.
Right.
So, yeah.
And then I used to work for a company that does theme cruises, music cruises, and he used to host one called All the Best, where he would be the guy on the boat. And he died, because I was working with the company at the time, in 2020 due to COVID complications.
Yep.
He was one of the first that, like, major notable musicians that passed away from COVID, like, right in the beginning. And he was older. I think he was in his 70s at the time when he passed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was headline news around the world when he went, and everybody was just affected. And if you knew the music, like, he was one of those great American bard storytellers. And like you said, Dylan was, like, a fan. And you know, people consider him to be the best storyteller in music. So, you know, that's a great pick. Great pick for them.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm envious of someone like Gasper, who maybe doesn't know him, just to go hear his songs for the first time. Or just... Yeah. Like when I hear that Lake Maria, I've listened to that song 300 times, and it shocks me. I get shocked every time I hear it again. Yeah,
yeah. I can't wait to check that out. Actually, that song, I could almost hear in my head Craig doing it. It's I bet you he draws some influence from them for sure.
Just give me one thing that I can hold on to believe in this living.
I hope you enjoyed it. It was fun. Like I said, I had avoided talking to anybody before the show so we could kind of all get the recap together, and I'm going to get it a few days before you, but we hope you enjoyed it. It's always fun for us to get together and chat the Hold Steady. And if you like what we do, give us a like, give us a follow. We are on Facebook, we are on Instagram, we may even be on Threads at this point. I mean, by the time you hear, the world of social media is changing, and we're trying to stay on top of it. But just we appreciate the support of everybody who gives us a listen.
Yeah, man, and if you're trying to find us on the social media, please check out our link tree. It's linktr.ee/thehoodratrecap. You'll find all our social media, all our episodes, and it's the greatest jumping off point to stay on top of what's up with the Hood Rat Recap.
I wanted to give a shout out to all the fans that came up to us and said hi to us. Me and Gasper were trying to stay in the moment. We barely took any pictures, any video, and we didn't record fans like we wanted to. But I know Tim, who recently moved from the Twin Cities to Toronto, he's a new listener and he really loves the show. And we just want to say thank you for your support. Again, Andrew came from Australia, people. He lives on the other side of the planet, and he was standing right next to us, and he was great. I think he even got a backstage pass at one point. I don't know what happened with that, but yeah. So I just want to say thank you to him. It was great seeing him in person. He even had to record his podcast for the racing when he was there, so he was busy.
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for us. I'm Gasper. That's Mike. That's Kevin. And all us guys, and all you guys and gals, especially all you folks that we saw right at the Salt Shed, we are all the Hood Rat Recap Podcast. Killer party suits.
And that's not Steve McQueen.